You're listening to Freed on Business. To talk to Jim and his guests, call 305-541-2350. That's 305-541-2350. Now, back to your host, Jim Freed.
All right, here we are. We've got a great show going. And we're here with my good friend, Jeff Glusman. Jeff is a certified retirement planning counselor from the College of Financial Planning. He's the senior vice president, senior financial advisor at Merrill Lynch, where he has been a wealth management advisor since 2001. For the last 16 years, Mr. Glusman has been the senior advisor of a wealth management team managing almost $1 billion, that's with a B, of client assets with a focus on affluent families with a significant headcount in the NFL, NBA, and Major League Baseball. Welcome back for our second segment, Jeff.
Thank you, Mr. Freed.
You are quite welcome. So let's go back to where we left off in the last segment. Guys making or ladies making all this money in pro sports, how do they not have anything left?
You know, we had a first rounder sit in our office about 3 or 4 months ago, and he asked that basic question and perplexed himself. And honestly, there's common mistakes that are made every day. Kids running out, having to get things on a wish list before they're even drafted. You're supposed to be a first rounder. Everyone tells you you're going to be a top 10 pick, and you go out and you get a $250,000 car. You spend $100,000 on jewelry, $50,000 on clothes. You get drafted in the third round.
You just spent your entire first year's salary.
You not only just spend your entire first year's salary, you took away whatever financial stability you would have in
going
the potential
future.
Because car, depreciating asset, jewelry, even these things are useless ultimately.
Well, you get a Panerai. That's not going to, you know.
It could be worse.
All right. So then what's the most outrageous request a client has ever made, or even better, a client's, quote, fingers going up, friend?
Well, I mean, this is an easy one, and I know my partners listening already know what I'm going to tell you. We sat at a table for lunch out in Los Angeles a few years ago with an offensive tackles family, and we were going over the contract and the numbers and what the net numbers would be and how we thought it should shake out and establishing a budget. And the young man conveyed that he wanted to help his family out a little bit. And we had dialogue about that and defined what that would mean. And we both agreed what it would be. And the family was at the table, and in the midst of nodding our heads that sounded like a good idea, the father-in-law slapped his hand on the table and said, "You're not going to break me off a little piece of nothing. You're going to give me $1.5 million up front." To which we just kind of looked at each other and looked at the young man and said, "Listen, we really appreciate your time, but we're not those guys."
That was his father or his father-in-law?
I believe it was his father, stepfather, father-in-law. It wasn't the guy.
He wanted his piece for bringing up the kid?
Yeah, bottom line. And he wasn't going to have it any other way. He didn't want to hear about tax efficiency. He didn't want to hear about the right kind of structure. My partner and I got up from the table and we left. And we got a call about 5 minutes later from the kid's mother who said, "Please come back. That's what we want. That's what we're looking for."
Well, that does seem to be what the right approach would be. And so perhaps that was a test?
I don't think it was a test. I think that was his legitimate feeling. And I think it was maybe a little bit of awareness for the rest of the family on what would be coming down the pike.
Wow. Now, how'd you get your start? We talked a little bit about it before. Mm-hmm. You had a couple of friends that got involved in a way where they could give guidance to people.
Well, it was, I got to Merrill Lynch because my father-in-law really said, "This is where you should be, and I believe it's the best place for you." And he was right from that standpoint, and I owe him more than I could even say.
Well, you're married to his daughter.
Well, I was about to say, actually, I give her more credit and my children and the rest of my family credit for dealing with me every day and understanding the travel, the clients that we have, and I thank all of them because they don't come at me for tickets or locker room passes or signed pictures or hats or the usual stuff that comes with this business. And that's something about our team. And you asked before, we don't go at our guys about that stuff. We're here to help them become educated and protect their money, not to be their friends, not to get them girlfriends, not to go out and party with them. But it's a great business. The guys that I know that got into the league, I was dealing with normal people money, and one of them referred me a running back. We took good care of that running back, and he told us about a couple teammates. And really, the light went on for me that having been an athlete, a sporto, whatever, in prior world, I wasn't intimidated by athletes, and I'd rather work with them and educate them and build a trust relationship for the long term than necessarily a 55-year-old architect who made his money.
Or a 56-year-old real estate professional.
who knows a little bit about money also.
Yeah, I could get you. So, you know, I get calls all the time from my friends. They all have sons. All the sons want to go into sports management. I told them all to go sell tickets for the Dolphins. But I do know that you do bring on summer interns, that you do grow your team, that there is a variety of opportunities as you continue to grow your business for people to come in and grow with you. How does somebody get involved with your team? In what ways is your team growing? How does that reflect on your view of the business? You've got 5 seconds. I'm kidding.
No, great questions. Really, it's growth of our teams happened steadily over the past 6 months. We added Albert Nassar, who's now running our basketball division. He played basketball at Syracuse, got his degree in finance. We brought in Isaiah Williams, who played football at Wisconsin, who's sitting for a CFP in a couple of months. And we added Austin Murphy, who just graduated from Villanova Law School. So Austin had interned for a couple of summers. That's how he built his way into the potential on the team. And Albert and Isaiah went through the normal process. They created a resume, submitted it, and went through 6 different interviews, heavy background testing. The one thing that these gentlemen know about our business is the attrition that exists at Merrill Lynch. Almost 78% of the advisors that start there fail. Our practice, we deal in sports and entertainment, is even a higher level of attrition because it's a smaller amount of client that you get to go after. So I encourage people that wanted to get in this business, the first thing they need to do is to learn how to build relationships. They need to learn how to effectively communicate and probably have a job before their Merrill Lynch job. That's the biggest advice I would give, because your Merrill Lynch job is your last job. This is where you are. If you work the way you're supposed to work for 5 to 7 years, you're going to work, and you've heard this cliche, harder than everyone does, but then you're going to be able to live a life that most people will never experience. And if you do your clients right, fiduciary is a big word today. This is something I feel like we've been doing for the last 16 years. We're looking out for our clients' best interests every day. And Charles E. Merrill said that. You don't have to worry about revenue. You don't have to worry about production. If you worry about the client and the client's best interest, the rest of it will take care of itself. And when you sit with parents and young men like this and you look them in the eye, they know. They know that this is real. They know that this is not TV, that this is not manure and ball bearings. It's legitimate. And that's what we're all about, delivering the promise.
You know, when I first met you, when I was running one of the big real estate shops down here, mm-hmm. you were the guy from Fort Lauderdale. We had one other guy from the north part of town that we put you with, that
sure.
you basically worked with, a guy named David Lipp.
Yeah.
Sounds to me like you learned an awful lot from David Lipp.
I did. David's work ethic, his genuine way, his honesty, and a couple of little tricks of the trade. And really, as a first job and having a mentor like that, and then you being the guy of that office as well, sometimes honesty hurts when you're young and you don't want to hear it. But I was lucky I had guys like you and David delivering a message that a lot of it I still keep with me today.
Well, thank you. That's actually very gratifying to hear. If people kind of call you, submit their inquiries to you, how would they go about doing that?
I mean, if you're a potential client, you can look us up at Merrill Lynch. I'm down on Las Olas in Fort Lauderdale. If you're someone who's interested in a job, you really have to go through the system at Bank of America Merrill Lynch. There isn't so much so anything like me can do for someone. That's the one thing that happily Merrill Lynch and Bank of America have eliminated from the process, the nepotism, so to say, right? It's
sure.
qualified people. But like my children, Mason, Judah, and Remy, I mean, they're young boys and they can have aspirations. And I've told them, you have to do the right things in school. You have to set yourself up with the right degrees and you have to want to be in this business. There's only 14,000 advisors at Merrill Lynch in the world. That's a small amount of people. There's only 8 of them at Merrill Lynch that deal with athletes and entertainers. So if your aspirations are to get into this space and be the next Jeffrey Glusman, or to be an agent and be the next Drew Rosenhaus, the odds are stacked against you. It's not impossible, but it's a mountain that is not one climbed easily by many.
Well, I got to say, I've been really looking forward to this for a long time, Jeff. I'm really glad that Merrill Lynch and the compliance department were able to get you on
10 years later, OMT came through.
Hey,
know?
Listen.
What can we do?
Listen, but the thing that makes me most proud is how well you've done. And I want to say thank you for coming on the show today. Thank you for being the fiduciary to a lot of people that seem to need somebody like you. Mm. And I'm so proud of everything that you've accomplished. It really means the world to me, Jeff. God bless you. I hope you'll come back and we'll do this again sometime.
Jim, I couldn't thank you enough. And, being around you and talking to you for before the show and seeing you in action, it's like I told you earlier, it's don't make me cry, man.
Don't. I love you. I love you. I love you. I really love you. I want you to come back. I want you to bring your kids. We're going to have a great show with your kids.
No doubt.
And your wife, your father-in-law, all the people. Love to have them all. But the most important thing, Jeff, is we got to talk about the person we have in common, our good mutual friend, the guy we both love, David.
He's
David
a good man, Charlie Brown.
David, we love you, David.
Much love.
Lots of shout out to David Lipp. Our next guest is going to be Dante Vittoria. We're going to talk about why the kids are coming and living on the parents' couch again. And then the last segment, I'm going to talk and give an update on Vivian. Jeff Glusman, I love you. Regan, let's rock it.